Hello and welcome to Matchsticks and Microphones. This is for the week of March 1st, 2011. I'm your host, Justin Azevedo. I'm on Twitter, at AzevedoJ, and I guess I no longer write at the Fourth Line blog. Who's with me tonight?
Hi, Haley from Matchsticks and Gasoline, MG underscore Haley on Twitter.
And I'm Eric. I also write Matchsticks and Gasoline. I am MG underscore Eric, spelled A-R-I-K on Twitter.
So just the three of us tonight. Nobody else in the studio. I'm kind of lonely all by myself sitting at two empty microphones, but let's get right into it, shall we?
The smoke!
Into the smoke and a quick review of the last week's games. 25th of February, played San Jose, 4-3 loss in the shootout. And, you know, it wasn't exactly a good game for the Flames, but they got it to the shootout. They got that extra point. Sunday against St. Louis and a 1-0 win. Once again, not exactly an impressive game, but Kipper is able to shut the door and let the guys just put that one past Ben Bishop for the win. And then right now going on in St. Louis, it's currently 5-0 with just under 2 minutes left. So that's probably going to end up a Flames win. I don't really see a furious comeback, but anybody got anything to say about this week's games?
Essentially, they're just finding ways to get points, which is, you know, crucial at this point in the season with them trying to secure a playoff spot. And as you said, the games haven't necessarily been good, but I don't know, it's kind of a tough position to take that you don't really want to complain because they're still getting points, but you want them to play better and, you know, deliver a more convincing performance against one of the league's best teams, which is the most worrying thing about the loss to San Jose. It's like a potential first-round opponent, I guess, at this point.
It's good that we're winning, but at the same time, the fact that we're not playing that well against St. Louis, you know, a team that's in like, I don't even know where they're in standings anymore just because our point, the standings are so bizarre these days, but like somewhere between like 12th or 11th, maybe even 13th, we're struggling against them. Like, it's good that we're getting the wins, but it does not say a lot of good things about like our chances in the playoffs going forward. I mean, we can pray that, you know, Kiprasov keeps up his good play. You know, we can hope that, but it's I feel like every game that goes by where we have to depend on Kiprasov more, the less chance of that continuing to happen in the playoffs there is. But yeah, and that's because partially that's because I don't believe in hot streaks. They're a statistical anomaly. But, I mean, I'm glad we got the wins. We didn't look horrible against San Jose. We're probably going to get a win tonight. We got a win Sunday night. Could definitely be worse. It could be December again.
I kind of think that these games are actually maybe not encouraging, but they're not a totally negative thing. I mean, for as bad as they played against San Jose, still being able to take that game to overtime and to get that point was pretty constructive, I think, in, at least in terms of the team being able to stay in the position they're in the standings just for that Bettman point. And then the game against St. Louis being able to, I don't know, I guess I don't want to say shut it down because both teams were sucking equally, but for them to be able to play that kind of close style game and then just pot that one goal and have Kipper shut it out is just that's a good sign, I think. Earlier in the year, Kipper was more of a liability than a actual good thing for the team, and now he's obviously kind of reversed that trend, and I'm guessing he's probably going to get another shutout tonight. So two shutouts in the past two games, he's playing pretty high level right now.
I know, it's kind of tough to say because you'd think at, you know, 34 years old, he wouldn't have the potential to really bounce back as he has, or is it more of a case of things just like evening out for him over the course of the season?
So I think it's probably two combined factors. It is the first thing is the bounces are evening out for him because I don't think he was as bad as he was that first quarter, whatever the season. It's just that he was getting the bad bounces against him or he was having some bad luck. So that is evened out. But also the amount of athleticism that Kipper has in compared to other goalies is pretty ridiculous. Like just before in pregame warm-ups, you see him doing those splits and like the way he moves when he's in the net is it gives him an advantage in terms of being able to recover from saves that might put him out of position, whereas some goalies might not be able to do that. I think it is the athleticism that he has and it is a bit of a regression to the mean for the percentages. So a combination of the two things. If I had to put more weight on one of them, I'd probably say the regression to the mean than the athleticism, but to have that athleticism is obviously a perk.
Yeah, I mean, if the tonight's is his 17th straight start and his second shutout in three games, it's just it's crazy. I mean, he's never been injured seriously, knock on wood. It's pretty insane.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. It's more regression to the mean than him, you know, actually being a better goalie. I mean, like you said, hot streaks are statistical anomalies. You know, that's the same in baseball. It's the same in, you know, shooting and hockey. It's just how it works. I mean, but that being said, it's not a bad time for him to hit that, you know, to hit this regression and have his, you know, hot streak. You know, there's definitely, like, if he's going to have it and we're trying to get in the playoffs, this is the time for him to have it. So, no complaints.
So, let's move right on to our next segment.
The Bonfire.
So the Bonfire today, obviously the trading deadline yesterday, the 28th of February, and while the Flames weren't exactly that active, just adding Frederick Modine and the depth defenseman, quote unquote, Brett Carson from the waivers, there was still a little bit of a flurry of activity, not as much as trade deadlines passed around the league last year, and a couple of big names being moved in terms of Jason Arnott and Dustin Penner. So I guess, Haley, if you want to start, maybe just things that stood out to you from yesterday.
I mean, really, it was what we thought, a lot of waiting around for, you know, the big deal, which turned out to be the Penner trade. And I don't know, there seems to be some differing opinion on that deal. I don't know how happy Oilers fans are with it, and then other people are saying they got too much. So I guess not everyone could always agree. from the Flames' point of view, as we talked about extensively on the site, it's basically not a win or lose situation for them. You know, both contracts expire at the end of the season, and Carson being an RFA, they basically very low risk moves, you know, not much of an impact.
I agree. A lot of people are like making out the Frederick Modine trade to be, you know, either bad or, you know, going against what Feaster said about going for youth and speed and all that. But the fact, I mean, you have to take Feaster's position into account, and like I'm totally on the record for this. I want the Flames to rebuild. I think that's the best thing to do for them. But that being said, the position the Flames are in right now, which is they will most likely sneak into the playoffs, the fact that Feaster, you know, is an interim or acting GM, you know, doesn't have the job permanently, means he's not going to start selling off assets at the trade deadline when A, you can get better deals done at the draft in June. And B, he wants to get into the playoffs and, you know, have something protecting the Flames. And you know what really made me happy is I managed to make these moves without sacrificing any picks or prospects. Okay, any significant picks. I mean, a seventh round pick is, you know, everyone loves to point out, you know, oh, Henrik Zetterberg was a seventh round pick. How many other ones can you name off the top of your head? I mean, really, it's not like trading a seventh round pick for Frederick Modine is not a huge deal. I don't think it's a good move, but I see where he's coming from with making it, and I have no significant problems with it. You know, there's plenty of time for him to start moving towards youth. I think the offseason is a much better time and place to do that than the trade deadline, especially given how little activity there was this year and how low a lot of the trades and, like, I mean, the Oilers got absolutely jobbed on that Penner trade. That was just absurd. Like, that defenseman from the Kings, he's been scratched like multiple times this year, and Tambellini had no idea, which is still hilarious.
Yes, the only seventh round pick of significance for the Flames would be David Moss, I believe, who scored a 16th goal tonight. But yeah, other than that, I mean, you're really not losing anything and giving up a late pick like that, especially in a draft like this year, which is considered to be pretty weak beyond the top five or top 10. So, I mean, yeah, basically he did what he wanted to do in adding depth players, you know, for the playoff run. And he's familiar with Modine, which for whatever that's worth, you know, it's probably not the player he was when he was with the Lightning. But, you know, yeah, I mean, you can't really complain too much. They didn't give up a roster player. These guys are making minimal money. So the deadline is definitely not the day or the time to start a significant overhaul on your team. I'd agree that the summer is definitely the better time to do that.
Well, and I said this yesterday. I mean, I don't really have a problem with trading for Frederick Modine. It's just that when you go back and you look at everything, I mean, yes, the seventh round pick is like a 4% chance of whatever becoming an NHL regular being 150 games or whatever over a career. That's done by Scott Reynolds over Copper and Blue. But like we had a player in Conroy, and we have players in the minors that are ostensibly depth players. And I don't, like, Frederick, he was scratched tonight. How many games is he actually going to play in the regular season is the first question. Second of all, is the talent drop off from Frederick Modine to, say, Lance Boma really that large? Like, that you can't play Lance Boma for five games?
Say it is. I mean, the thing is, Lance Boma is still a rookie. I mean, he's an AHL rookie. He's an NHL rookie. He's not adjusted to the pro game yet. And it's fine to play him for like 7 minutes a night in a regular season game in like February. But when you're in, you know, late April or playoffs in May, you know, you need somebody, like somebody gets injured, you want somebody who, you know, maybe they're not going to score points, but they're not going to panic on defense. You know, they're not, oh shit, I'm in the playoffs. What do I do? You know, and I guess I think that's just more of a case of what this is, you know, Boma is fine for, you know, mid-season call-up, you know, play a few minutes a game. But when it's not the middle of the season, that's not who you want on the team.
I mean, Carson was really the more bizarre move to me, I think, because the Flames do have so much depth on defense, especially in the minors. And a guy that's never played a full NHL season just kind of adds to the backlog there. I mean, obviously, with a guy like Brody, who they had at the beginning of the season, then you have, I think, Pellick's hurt again, which is just another thing entirely. But you have a bunch of other guys down there, and with Erickson maybe coming up next year, it's just, you know, I don't know where they think they get off thinking they need all these extra bodies on defense, even if you are sending a guy or two down to the ECHL. It's just kind of absurd.
Especially because they have a guy that's been sitting in the press box for the past however many games in Brendan Mikkelsen, who is already a better player, I
Right.
think we came to that conclusion, than Steve Staios is. And Steve Staios is getting those regular minutes. And you mentioned Pellick and Brody, and there's also guys like Negrin and like Staios and Mikkelsen. So by my count, that's at least five guys that the Flames have that are, you know, kind of in that AHL, NHL place where Carson is now in. And it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if Negrin is back 100% healthy yet, but yeah, your point still stands. There's just I don't know, a ridiculous number of defensemen who are on the cusp, and that's pretty much exactly where Carson is.
Well, I'd like to address the whole, you know, some of the AHL players you mentioned. And like, problem with, you know, Negrin, Pellick, and Brody is, of those three, Brody is the best. Negrin and Pellick are not very good defensemen. I hate to say it. They are, in a way, they're almost your prototypical Daryl Sutter defenseman, which is to say they're big, slow, lumbering, and built for pre-lockout hockey. They're not guys I would expect to really see for more than one or two games. Brett Carson apparently can actually skate. And that right there is just enough for me to say, you know, as a depth defenseman, as an injury call-up, I won't complain. And the other thing is, Brody is also, again, still really young. And think about it, like when he was, you know, with the Flames and, you know, both training camp, you know, and for those, you know, what, six games it was he played in the regular season, how much defense did he really play? I mean, he's pretty much just out there on like offensive zone draws and power plays. And that's not a knock against him. I mean, the guy just came out of junior. It's just a fact that he's, you know, much like I was saying about Boma, he's probably not really ready for the heavier lifting. As far as Carson goes, I mean, the acquisition of Carson troubles me for some other reasons, which I'll get to maybe a little bit later. But in and of himself, I mean, it's not really like, I mean, yeah, I feel like, you know, Mikkelsen and Staios are both probably steadier players than Brett Carson. I'd say he's definitely a lot more. I mean, he played 56 games last season, I think it was, in the NHL. Yeah, that puts him at a lot more NHL capable than any of the guys who are playing full time with the Heat.
Yeah, I guess I don't know if you want someone who can skate and who's more of an offensive guy than, you know, call up Seabrook or someone like that. I mean, they just basically, the whole point of acquiring Carson, from what I gathered, was that they wanted someone to replace Staios in the lineup so they could sit him. And then, even if that was the case, you have Mikkelsen sitting in the press box. I don't think that it's a bad move and that he, like, it's lost or anything, but it's just kind of doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
I think both their moves were just redundant in that, you know, we already have the players like can play like Carson, especially with Mikkelsen in the press box. And then with Modine, I mean, yes, there is some value to him being that veteran presence, leadership, quote unquote, and the playoff experience, but he's not playing very much higher than replacement level right now. And his advanced stats, especially in Atlanta, I know we talked about this in the thread, is that he hasn't been completely lucky this year, or even maybe he's had some bad luck, but he's not doing anything to try and get himself out of that position. Like, his play isn't putting him towards a PDO of over 1,000. It's just, he's kind of just been a replacement level player, and that's it. And it's not that hard to find those guys, especially within the Flames system.
I mean, really, like, I'm just curious, like, where are you going to find a replacement level player in the Flames system? You know, the guy who can come in at, like, you know, say, you know, game one of, you know, first round, and Kostopoulos goes down the fourth line. Who are you going to find to replace him? I mean, I'm having trouble really becoming a fan of any of the Flames, any of the players in the Flames system, like on the Heat, especially. There's just, I don't know if it, maybe it's the coaching. Maybe it's the fact that it's a really young team, but they just are not very good. I've watched a little bit of Seabrook. The guy cannot skate. I mean, and I'm not saying, you know, they got Carson for offensive ability, just someone who doesn't get blown past on the penalty kill, which is sadly the case for about two-thirds of Flames defenders at the moment.
Okay, well then I got a question for you. Would you rather have Conroy and Mikkelsen on the team right now, or would you rather have Carson and Modine on the team for what we gave up for Modine?
Can I take... Well, I don't know. I mean, Conroy, I'm not really sure how I feel about that still. I mean, like, on the one hand, you know, it was clear he wasn't producing a whole lot. And the fact is, you know, Modine's actually has produced more this year. On the other hand, I do love Craig Conroy. Can I just take, like, can I take Conroy and Carson?
Sure.
I'm not a huge Mikkelsen fan.
Sure. I mean, but then, like I said, it's just having those, even just taking one of those guys just means that the moves, or at least one of them, was redundant and it just didn't need to happen.
It was redundant, but that doesn't, but I mean, redundant doesn't necessarily mean like bad or awful. It's
oh,
just,
no, but
it was.
I'm not saying it's bad,
I'm
or I'm
not
saying
it's a good move.
Yeah. I understand that. I understand that. It's just that I just don't think it's necessary. And that's what it's just movement for the sake of movement. And I don't really like that. There's a logical fallacy. I can't remember the name of it. But it's the way that people think. It's like, you know, oh, we have to do something. This is available. Therefore, we must do this. And it just doesn't really fly with me in terms of, especially with an NHL general manager and personnel on the team.
I guess you think of the move of picking up Mikkelsen in the first place was almost the same because all their defensemen were healthy, I think, at the point when they picked him up off waivers. And they just sent Brody back down to the minors and used Mikkelsen as the seventh D. And he's basically been sitting in the press box ever since.
I mean, that move is kind of defendable in that Eric said, you know, earlier, Brody doesn't have this NHL experience. You know, the Flames are in a position where they need some guy that does.
Yeah,
and Mikkelsen has what, like 80 something games of being of NHL experience, and just picking up a guy off of waivers is fine, especially if he's only planning to be your seventh defenseman.
I'd rather send Brody down than have him sit and watch games.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Oh yeah, definitely. I'd rather have Mikkelsen in the press box than Brody sitting there altogether. It's just kind of, you know, if they're not going to play him, you could send him down.
Well,
and he would have to, would he have to go through waivers?
Yeah, he would, because that's
right.
That's how we got him in the first place, was the waivers. But he did go play conditioning stint.
Yeah.
I think it was 3 or 4 games earlier, but you're only allowed to do one of those per year, so
he's
pretty much stuck up there the rest of the season, or until somebody, if somebody goes down, hopefully not, unless it's Steve Staes breaking his hip again.
Yeah.
But anyways, Eric, do you have anything anything else that stood out to you? Just not necessarily Flames. I know Haley said the penetrate.
Well, I'd like to talk a little bit about the Carson acquisition from like a different perspective and why it troubles me a little bit. And you know, again, like the acquisition itself, I have no problem with. I think it's fine. You know, another defenseman. You know, it can't hurt long term, you know, especially if you're not giving up anything for him. The thing that bothers me is when Jay Feaster is doing the, you know, the presser, and someone asked him about Carson. He said that Carson was a guy they've been trying to target from the beginning of the season. And I look at that and I think, why are you so interested in this guy that, like, he's been on your radar for the whole season? Why have you been that interested in him when it's clear no other team is? And that says that either one of two things. Either the Flames scout pro scouting is better than most other teams, or the Flames pro scouting is worse than most other teams.
I think we all know which way that we're all leaning towards in terms of that.
Yeah.
But and I mean, especially because he's 24, 25, correct? And he's likely already hit his peak ability of what he's doing right now. I mean, maybe there's one more year of development, but if he's not an NHL regular, like I know he did have 50 games last year, but the Hurricanes were awful last year. So I just don't really ever see him developing into that NHL defenseman, even as a number six guy.
So he's got to be the same age as Pelech. Obviously, there are different players, but it's the same kind of situation, I guess, other than the fact that he has more experience. They're both drafted a while ago and have yet to really become regular fixtures on their teams.
Yeah, and I mean, with Pelech, that is, before this season, I guess, it was more of a combination of, first, the injuries, and then second, the Daryl Sutter syndrome of signing that veteran guy to a one-year contract like Anders Ericsson or whatever, and creating a roadblock for the younger players to come up.
Yeah, basically burying him in the minors.
Exactly. So, I mean, with the injuries, obviously have derailed his development quite a bit. Just the amount of even season-ending injuries from last year, and the blood clots and all that stuff. I mean, scary stuff, but eventually it hits a point where you have to realize that this guy isn't going to be a part of your NHL team, and it's just time to let him go. And I think, obviously, we've hit that point with Chris Chucko after this year being out again with another concussion, or I guess neck contusion, mm-hmm. or whatever. So we'll see about that.
Yeah, it was a slow trade deadline. I mean, I can't say it was entirely unexpected given the whole, you know, the however many trades happened before it, but it was a long day.
I was kind of disappointed that Feaster couldn't wrangle a trade together for to get Velociraptor and Pudding
yeah.
out of the minors, I guess, there. But anyways, we'll move on to our last segment.
The kindling.
So into the kindling, and quick run through of the next week's game. Tomorrow, Chicago. I guess that's a 7 o'clock Mountain Standard Time start for us, and it will actually be picked up in progress. There's regulations and stuff due to the NHL's broadcast agreements with the Toronto Sports Network there that prevent Sportsnet from being able to go right from the get go. So it'll be a 7:30 start for TV watchers out there. Friday against Columbus, and that'll be in Calgary. So that's also another probably must win game, or at least against a weaker opponent that the Flames can take advantage of. And then Nashville on Sunday, that one's at 6 o'clock Mountain Time, and that's also in Calgary, and that should be a pretty good game. Two evenly matched teams. And anybody got anything to say about those?
I wouldn't be so quick to write off Columbus. I think they're they've been playing well lately, despite the fact that their goalies are terrible, and they've still got Rick Nash. He's not going anywhere ever, but you know, he's still a great player. You know, Voracek's a solid player. I mean, they got Scotty Upshaw, and he's, you know, he's obviously not like the greatest player in the world, but he's a solid contributor. And I think I wouldn't be so quick to write them off. I think they're better than the Blues are right now. You know, I mean, we've had some great bounces going our way against the Blues, but you know, the team didn't actually play that well. So I mean, I think it'll be a good game. I think they're probably pretty evenly matched to the Flames.
Yeah, I'm definitely more nervous about tomorrow. I mean, obviously, they rarely play well against Chicago, never mind in their own or on the road. So it's going to be a test, especially with Chicago playing as well as they have been recently.
So we'll move on to Flameouts. And Eric, do you have anything this week?
Just that another High Tide Hockey will be up Thursday. That's about it.
Haley?
Not really. I mean, I might be kind of scarce for the remainder of this week because I have so much stuff to do, a couple papers, so you might not see me around too much in the comments and stuff like that, but yeah, that's about it.
As for me, I'm just hoping to get some sleep tonight, because 6 hours of sleep sandwiched between 28 hours of work isn't exactly fun. So other than that, good job by the Flames tonight, 6-0 win, and hopefully they do well tomorrow night against the Blackhawks. But thank you for joining us. If you want to contact us, matchsticksandmicrophones@gmail.com. Haley's on Twitter at mghaley, matchsticksandgasoline.com. Eric's on Twitter as mgeric, and also at matchsticksandgasoline.com. I'm at AzevedoJ on Twitter, and everybody have a good week.